Welcome to the midweek Mission Ridge podcast known as Footnotes. Footnotes is here to give you some of the stuff that we didn't have time to cover in the sermon and encourage you to dig in deeper as you study the text. So let's dive in and check out what's in the footnotes. All right. Well, welcome to another episode of Footnotes. Glad to have you with us. This week, we are down one Paul Patterson and a Molly Patterson. We are Patterson-less this week. Paul's out with the flu, but we are going to trek right on and create some footnotes anyway. So we'll probably have more fun, I'm going to be honest. Today, we've got Josh Croyle.
Hey, hey.
We got Rob Croyle.
Hey.
And myself, your favorite bearded Logan Daly. Hopefully the only Logan Daly.
We've got, we might be missing Polly and Molly, but together we've got associate pastor and associate and son.
associate and son. That's going to be the name of this podcast.
I like that. That's nice. So to kick things off, Paul was gone this weekend too because he was sick, and Rob was preaching anyway, so we get to do Paul's shortcomings without Paul. His first shortcoming would have been that he was not there.
He was not there. He was sick.
He got goofed. And he's really bad at getting better.
He's really bad at getting better. He's very bad at getting better, but hopefully it does. Because that's...
I think we finally got him, like, resting and drinking fluids. If not, I'm going to sick Lori on him.
Oh.
Yeah, there you go.
A little waterboarding.
Forcing the water down.
Lord and Lori over him.
Ooh, I'm going to Lord Lori over him. I like that. That's nice. I like that.
Yeah, I don't... What he's got, I don't wish on anybody.
He's got the flu.
Let alone my buddy. But yeah, it's a nasty flu, and he has not felt well. When he called me this morning,
and
he started off the conversation with...
Ooh, it's not good when you sound like a Logan. That was a burn on myself. It's all right.
He says, are you there? And I'm like, I was just waiting for you to be done.
All right. But yeah, despite Paul being gone, we managed to survive Sunday. We had plenty of shortcomings ourselves.
Oh, man. The whole morning was...
There was all sorts of fun stuff. Yeah. We had tech issues galore. Including, but not limited to, Logan forgetting how to tell what time it was. So I think we started the whole service 8 minutes late, because some jackwagon named Logan couldn't figure out how to read his clock. But whatever, it's fine. It was actually a really good Sunday. We had a grand old time, and Jesus showed up, and it was good.
It didn't sound rushed when I listened to my sermon, but... I was reading through those passages like
it felt rushed.
Yeah, I had a staff in my hand, you know. I had unleavened bread, you know. Yes, there was an urgency to my reading.
Just trekking right along.
There was a lot of passages to read through. Yeah,
there was a lot of scripture this Sunday.
Yeah,
there was a lot of stuff that you jammed in there. It was good. It was good though. So we're going to get right into it because we do have plenty of stuff to talk about today. Because despite the fact that there was tons in the sermon, there's tons more to talk about because there is a lot going on in these passages.
A lot of scripture.
So we went through the fig. We got the temple cleansing with the bookends of the fig tree withering and dying and Jesus cursing a fig tree and all that goodness. The first thing that pops into my mind with this actually is Jonah. And we are not sure, but there could be some reference remez, possibly, to the story of Jonah, where at the end of Jonah in chapter 4, you've got him griping and pouting like an angry, sullen teenager about God being okay with saving Nineveh and giving them the time of day, the outsiders, if you will. And sending him to do that. And at the end, so God brings this fig tree up to shade him, and then he sends a worm and it withers. And I can't help but think that there are some, at least some parallels between what you were bringing up in your sermon about this being about the Gentiles and about being a priesthood to all nations, and this thing with Jonah. So, for anyone listening, if you want to go chase that down and find some similarities in that one, would encourage you to do so. That's just a fun little tidbit there. But the next thing we wanted to talk about was the inspection of leprosy.
Yeah, well, going back to Jonah real quick, it's not a fig tree, it is a plant.
Yeah, it's just a plant.
It's just a plant, but there is, it does wither and...
I'm seeing some parallels there.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting thought. And so I was reading while you were talking, so what's the next thing?
The inspection of the lepers. We wanted to talk about the inspecting leprosy.
Okay, so Mark 11:11, it says, Jesus entered Jerusalem and came into the temple, and after looking around at everything, he left for Bethany. And I mentioned that this was kind of an odd anticlimactic ending to the triumphal entry. Paul had mentioned it the week before. I brought it up again. When I looked at this last week, the word for looking around, there's two Greek words. The first one means all around. The second one means look at, gaze on. And so the sense is a closely observe with a sweeping, encompassing look with high personal involvement. So Jesus is doing something very particular with this, and Mark is highlighting something, and it feels kind of like an Easter egg a little bit, because it's a strange little occurrence in the middle of the triumphal entry and the temple cleansing. Like what is this all about? Well, Paul talked about this with us during Sermon Club last week. All the synoptic gospels talk about the temple cleansing taking place at the end of the story, towards the
end of Jesus' life.
Towards the end of Jesus' life, the end of his ministry.
Yeah.
John, however, cleanses the temple early in his gospel. So in John chapter 2, starting in verse 13, we see that Jesus comes in and he cleanses the temple. And the details about it are a little different. The things that he says are a little different. So it gives you the sense that these are different events. Well, if you look in Leviticus 14, it addresses what happens if a person is leprous, if a garment is leprous, if a house is leprous, and this is what it says. The priest shall then command that they empty the house before the priest goes in to look at the mark, so that everything in the house need not become unclean. And afterward, the priest shall go in to look at the house. He shall look at the mark, and if the mark on the walls of the house has a greenish or reddish depression and appears deeper than the surface, then the priest shall come out of the house to the doorway and quarantine the house for 7 days. The priest shall return on the seventh day and make an inspection. If the mark has indeed spread in its walls of the house, then the priest shall order them to tear out the stones with the mark in them and throw them away at an unclean place outside the city. He shall have the house scraped all around the inside and shall dump the plaster that they scrape off at an unclean place outside the city. Then they shall take other stones and replace those stones, and he shall take other plaster, replaster house. So they're trying to save the house.
Sure.
Continues. If, however, the mark breaks out again in the house after he has torn out the stones and scraped the house, and then after it has been replastered, then the priest shall come and make an inspection. If he sees that the mark has indeed spread in the house, it is a malignant mark in the house, it is unclean. He shall therefore tear down the house, its stones and its timbers, and all the plaster of the house, and he shall take them outside the city to an unclean place. Well, Mark records Jesus in Mark 13 that Jesus said to them, "Do you see these great buildings? Not one stone will be left upon another, which will be not be torn down."
So, to sum up the Leviticus, if a house is found to have leprosy in it, so something's in there that's making it unclean, could be mold or whatever.
Mildew.
Yeah. Yeah, something is corrupting the cleanliness of this household.
Yep.
They go in, they check it out, they let it be. Then they go in, they check it out and cleanse it.
Yep.
Then they let it sit. Well, they try to clean it out. Then they come back. If it breaks out again, then they just raise the whole thing to the ground.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, they clear everything out of the house
for
the inspection. Jesus cleanses the temple twice. Everything is removed from the house.
Sure.
Twice.
He was given the temple the Santa Claus treatment. Checking it twice.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
I don't know if I can handle a podcast with two Croyles just by myself. Wow.
Yes.
That was a good one, Josh.
Pray for Logan.
Yikes.
He is a saint.
Yikes. Okay. Oh my goodness. No, that's the other thing that I had heard with, because I'd always been told that you got to be careful about harmonizing the Gospels. Because they are written with different, they're written with different agendas. And so,
yes.
With John, there was, I've heard other thoughts that the, the temple cleansing occurring at the beginning of John was him, just utilizing that story for his narrative and just putting it where he wanted it for his narrative.
Always,
and there is debate between those two.
Yeah.
It didn't actually happen twice, or there is the potential that it did happen twice. Which I think that this, hearing this for the first time, at least for me, is it gives a little more credence to the whole it did happen twice. So that's curious to me. I really like this.
Yeah, and the implication is Israel, give back to your calling to be a kingdom of priests.
Yeah, you've gotten off of your got off of your path, huh? Which, I mean, that does make sense with the Bethany reference then. I think that ties in really quite nicely.
And explain that.
I mean, that's because Bethany was, correct me if I'm wrong here, but if I remember correctly, Bethany was where you would go to become clean. Like, it was known for its healing pools, and you would go there for leprosy, right?
Yeah, there's a leprosy colony there.
Yeah.
And so Mark mentions multiple times that Jesus, wink, wink, nod, nod, he's going to Bethany. Like these are just cultural references that if you're from that time and period, like this just jumps out at you.
Sure.
Bethanim, it's house of the sick.
House of the sick.
House of the sick.
There you go. I like that. I like that a lot. Which that kind of, okay, so talking temple cleansing, I know, Josh, you wanted to bring up something about the tassels.
About the tassels.
Give me this tidbit about the tassels.
No, I'm told this isn't a for sure thing, and I always like talking about things like they are a for sure thing, but there's a... one of the things that really sticks out in this story is Jesus, making for himself a whip to drive out with great force the money changers.
Right.
And that always, that sticks out to people. They're like, oh, well, Jesus was like real peaceful. Like, Peter whips out his knife and chops a guy's ear off and just kind of puts that back on.
Just like, no, not like that.
So it seems a little out of character, at least... as a general statement for Jesus to start whipping people. But one of the ways that could be interpreted is that he's taking his tassel, which is, symbolic for our motif of this week of them being
set apart,
a nation of priests.
Yeah, the blue thread within the white.
And he's shaking it at him. He's saying, This is not who we are. This is not, our covenant.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't what we're supposed to be about.
Yeah, it's actually not in Mark, but it is in John and I believe the other Gospels where he says, and he made a scourge of cords.
Yeah.
And the key word there would be cord.
Mm-hmm.
because there's out of the tassels there was supposed to be a cord of blue. Yeah. So it'd be interesting. I haven't looked at it. I know Paul has looked at it. He doesn't like this theory very much.
Yeah, he doesn't fully buy into it. He can't disprove it. But since he's not here, we can talk about it a little bit
we
more.
We can talk about it without
and not have him not have him get all pushbacky.
Well, this may be like a Jewish idiom. Like
sure.
Scourge of cords is the thought of shaking your tassels, and if that is a Jewish idiom of the time, then that gives us a little different picture of Jesus.
Well, and I think the main thing to take away from this one is that it's not necessarily Jesus going all freak out, because there's tons of memes where it's like, just remember when people say, you know, be like Jesus, or what would Jesus do? Remember that throwing tables and whipping people is an option. That's not really, either way, that's not really where this story is going. It's not saying
certainly
you can be a jerk to people.
You can't just, you know, show up at the farmer's market and start flipping tables.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing there is, like, remember, this is not just, like, this would be like showing up to a Bible study.
Yeah.
Well,
he's hitting the religious people.
Yeah, he's talking,
like,
but I love that board picture, Josh, of farmer's market. I mean, I believe that's the visual that
they turned
have.
It into that.
The county fair
versus what I pictured as a kid. I mean, of all the drawings I've seen, and I believe that
there's like a couple, there's like two tables. A guy's got a chicken in a cage on one. Like,
yeah.
Yeah,
Jesus just shows up, flips over a table, and says, "Cut it out," and they run away.
Like, this would have to be a.
No, this was probably a very laborious process. Jesus going through this, what? How many acres? What's the acreage on that again? It was like.
It was 36 acres. And the temple area itself with the court of women would have been 5 football fields, roughly. We'll get into that here in a minute, but roughly 5 football fields.
Talking about a big yard.
20, where you can play football.
Lots of room.
we can do a whole tournament here. Have 5 games going at the same time.
Yeah. So
the audio adrenaline song was very right, and that you can play lots of football.
Can play lots of football. Exactly 5 games at one time.
Oh my goodness. Which, okay, so knowing the size of this, and since Paul isn't here, I'm going to stick up for his pushback on that. Knowing the size of this, I don't think Jesus is just, like, subtly spinning his tassels, which, you know, he's not just, like, doing this little movement, and everyone's like, oh. Like, this is a loud, noisy place, so he's probably making at least a little bit of a ruckus.
Oh, he is. He is, and I think it's appropriate. But let the transition right into, and Jesus was teaching.
Yeah, he's not just like attacking people, because they're not going to sit around and listen to him teach.
Yeah, he's.
I think he's just drawing attention.
He's not manic.
Yeah.
He's raising a point, and I think people are catching that. It says the people were astonished.
Yeah.
At his teachings. Not his actions, but he was, mm-hmm. you know, like, oh. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, and then something that Sean, I think, brought up last night as we were talking
about
care group was that, like, it says that he wouldn't let anybody out with their wares, like the things that they purchased.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that kind of stood out because, like, this is a big place, and there's all kinds of people buying all their, you know, their sacrifices. But Jesus is, like, he just has this authority where, like, they're not leaving. Like, imagine just showing up at the county fair, and you're like, sorry, you can't, hey, stop buying that funnel cake over there and pay attention.
Yeah. Was it that he wouldn't let them leave, or he forced them all out? Let me double check that.
Yeah, go look at that.
He would not permit anyone to carry goods through the temple. So he just stopped all the traffic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So whether he wouldn't let him take him out, he wouldn't let him take any, he just stopped. He got everything to stop, which 5 football fields worth of area that he's holding command over.
Well, no, the 5 football fields is the temple itself with the court of the women. So that's 5.
Oh, okay, yeah.
There's another 18 football fields.
That is a lot of football.
That is the court of the Gentiles in rough numbers. Maybe it's not quite 18 because there's a Solomon's portico.
Sure.
Let's call it 10 football fields.
Let's round down. Round down to 10 football
round
fields.
Round down to 10 football
round down to 10 football fields of area that Jesus is holding control over.
Well, you know, and this kind of reminds me of Jesus saying, if you are there to make your offering and you remember that someone else has something against you,
mm-hmm.
that you go and you make it right first, you leave your offering,
yep.
you go and make it right, and then you come back. And I just picture the first guy getting up there with this sheep, you know, bleeding.
Yeah, how many altars do they have?
There's one altar.
There's one altar.
And so here's a sheep. You go, you know, like my master left me and I'm supposed to lay down, you know, like I'm supposed to get slaughtered here, but I'm just like, and the second guy recognizes what the first guy does. And then he goes, oh shoot, I need to deal with things too.
I need to go get things right before I do this.
So pretty soon you just have a bunch of sheep left there at the altar, you know.
Left at the altar.
And Jesus is saying, you think the sacrifice is the most important part? It's your relationship with people that is really going to show people whether or not you're a true follower.
Yeah, whether or not the sacrifice actually means what you want it to mean is whether or not you've got your crap together before you do this.
Yeah.
No, that's a good one. Which this ties in with our next topic that we wanted to bring up, which was Paul's arrest. Not our pastor Paul, but Paul the Apostle.
That's a story for another time.
That is a story for another time. Hot dang.
We'll let him tell that.
We'll let him tell that.
We won't tell other people's stories here.
There's going to be a ton of people that are asking, wait, when did you get arrested, Paul? So go and find the meaning of this. But the Apostle Paul in Acts 21, he's at the temple and he gets arrested. He's getting hassled for bringing Gentile believers into the temple where they're not supposed to be. I did a brief reading on this one because this was another one of those that Pastor Paul was supposed to be jabbering about today. But we'll give it a little bit. And you can go research this more. There's a spot in the temple, and this is the largest area where the Gentiles, like we said, at least probably 10 acres, up to possibly 18, depending on the wall size, football fields.
Yeah.
Depending on that, like, this is a huge area where the Gentiles are allowed to worship.
Yeah.
And they are supposed, this is their place. Everybody is allowed here. It seemed like from reading that they arrested Paul because they were concerned that this guy who had been preaching and reaching out to the Gentiles so effectively would have no qualms about bringing them past the court of women and into even the inner part where they're not supposed to be for sure on penalty of death. They arrest him. But it didn't seem like he had actually taken anybody in there. They were just so worried about the Gentiles that they weren't even going to let him be in their place where they're supposed to be.
Well, and what's funny is when Paul responds to this, he doesn't even address their concern. He just goes on this. He talks about their history and then how God started working in the Greeks' lives, and how the gospel, this new kingdom, was mm-hmm. moving out, and the Greeks are included, and then the religious leaders went into a tizzy, and that's when Paul calls upon Rome and says, "Hey, I'm gonna go see Caesar."
Yep. Yeah.
So he doesn't even, he's like, this isn't even worth addressing.
It's almost, it's a little Jesus-esque.
Yeah.
In that they're freaking about this thing here in one hand, and Paul just ignores that and completely talks about what's really at the root of all this stuff.
Was that when he's in front of the Sanhedrin?
I believe so, yes.
Because I was just looking at that too, and he was like, he like intentionally brings up resurrection because he knows that the Sadducees don't believe in resurrection and the Pharisees do believe in resurrection.
And he's just going to start a fight between these guys.
And so they just start.
I mean, and that's such a, that's something Jesus would do of like, yeah, no, I'm going to completely ignore what you just asked me about. And I'm going to talk about this over here because this is actually important. What you just asked me about is not important.
It's interesting.
We might see that this week in this week's sermon.
We very well might.
Whose inscription is on this coin?
Yeah.
No, but he's a. I think it's interesting because they're concerned about this division of. This is the line that Gentiles don't cross. We fit over here, they fit over there.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, what about, it's almost like he's sort of highlighting the division that's already among themselves.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, we want, like you want to have a theological question, conversation, you want to have a theological conversation, I want to have a reality conversation.
Hmm.
Like you want to talk about the Gentiles being out? Let's talk about resurrection.
And division is all fine until you're the one that's on the outside.
Yeah.
Well, if you're a Sadducee and you don't believe in resurrection, then all you have to live for is the here and now.
Sure.
And there really isn't, you know, judgment really. I have to believe it's got, you know, but Jesus said, you are mistaken and you don't understand the power of God because he's the God of the living and not the God of the dead.
Yeah.
And he references Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as if they were still living and they were still very real people experiencing life.
Mm-hmm.
Just not in a way that we understand it, which is a great conversation.
Hmm. That's a good one, Josh. That's a good point. Like I said, this is thick and heavy with side conversations and tangents. And when you start digging into these stories, this is what it's all about. And we're just glancing over the surface of some of this stuff. So go and research more of this. For sure. Now, Rob, I know, and we've talked about this a little bit because we've been using this in the conversation, but let's talk about the size of the temple grounds.
Okay.
Because the size of the temple grounds was not necessarily what God wanted. But we've kind of talked about it a little bit, but let's just paint a picture of how big the temple is.
Well, so you had the original
Temple of Solomon.
Well, before the temple, you had the tabernacle.
Yes.
And the tabernacle was a tent, basically.
It was a good-sized tent, but still a tent.
It was a good-sized tent, less than a football field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the overall structure with the walls that separated and all that was less than a football field. Herod's Solomon's temple is about 3/4 of a football field, just in landmass.
Sure.
Herod's temple, including the women's courtyard, is closer to roughly 5 football fields. The big difference between Herod's temple and Solomon's temple is the height. Yeah. So the outer walls for the temple itself are taller by some estimates are taller than Solomon's temple in the first place. So, and then the temple itself dwarfs the court wall. So where the walls that make up the women's courtyard, and then you have the inner court where the priests perform their sacrifice with the men and the boys. Those walls are taller than the original temple. And then, like, it is Herod's temple. Like, Herod was this massive, massive, massive builder. We'll talk a little bit more about his creations and what he did.
Sure. He was the richest man in the world.
Oh.
Like, the amount of money that he had to throw at things was insane. It dwarfs anybody nowadays.
He trumps Trump. He just makes Jeff Bezos look like
he's getting paid like cutting Herod's lawn.
Yeah, he'd be packing, shipping up Herod's Amazon packages.
Exactly. Just like Herod was.
Well, picture Dubai.
Yeah.
Picture Dubai compared to Missoula.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the you go from the Tabernacle to Dubai. Or the Tabernacle to Herod's Temple and the Temple Mount and everything that Herod created, that is the wealth upon wealth upon wealth.
The grandeur that they're emulating here. And this is like you were mentioning on Sunday, that they're looking more and more like Rome.
Yes.
I mean, Herod is Rome. In every sense of the word. And so you've got a ton of Roman influence in this, that we want to build bigger and bigger and bigger and stronger and bigger and more grand.
Yeah, the architecture is more Roman than
sure.
by a long shot.
But it didn't necessarily, this pattern started way before Rome. This started back with David.
Yep.
So if you look in First Chronicles, this happens a couple of times. It's mentioned a couple of times. But specifically, you look in First Chronicles chapter 22, and previously before that a little bit, David is wanting to build a more grand tabernacle. He wants to build something better for the Lord.
Yes.
And Nathan the prophet says, yeah, go ahead and build what your heart desires. Like, this is fine. It doesn't say the Lord says, but Nathan says, so, all right, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, this is still okay.
Yep.
And David starts doing this. And then eventually, God puts the kibosh on what David is doing and says, no, you're not going to build, like, no, you don't get to build me a temple. And David circumvents this in 1 Chronicles 22 by saying, all right, well, you know, I don't get to build it, but I'm going to prepare everything so that my son, Solomon, can build this grandiose, the most glorious, most wonderful, hugest. It's going to be huge.
Just supersize me.
We're just going to supersize this thing, and it's going to be just, but my son gets to do this, not me. But I'm going to just get everything ready for it.
Give him a small loan of $1 million.
Small loan of $1 million. Oh, man, the reference here, they're thick and heavy. But it's more than that. It's not even like, oh, I'm just going to give you some starter money. It's like Jeff Bezos is like, no, I'm going to build this company, but it's my son's company, right?
It's not in my name.
It's not in my name. It's my son's company, right? But really, where's the glory going to? Like, somebody's living vicariously through their child.
I'm going to leave you all the bricks, and we're just going to have them laid out ready for you to...
Here's the plans, here's the bricks, here's the workers. You just have to sign on the dotted line, and this is going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, this is the... And so, like, even with David here, they've started down this path of, I think, kind of missing the point. Now, does that mean that the temple's bad? No, I don't think so necessarily. It just might not be what God originally intended. And I mean, we were talking earlier a little bit, Josh, about how often do we take our plans and decide this is what God wants,
And really, God might be a little bit more like, nope, you kind of missed it. But then he'll come alongside and work with it anyway, because that's what you're doing. Because he eventually, yeah. he you know, condones the temple and kind of, he says, all right, well, this is what you're going to use, so we'll use it. We mentioned binding and loosing, but
yeah.
How often do we do that? Like, that's, I know I've done it in my life where it's like, no, these are my plans. And
just every time I've dated a girl, you know.
Rob's going to stay silent on that one.
I'm trying to find, I know God, on one hand, he says to David, you did well wanting to build me a place.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, he says, you know, can man build a house where that will contain me?
Exactly.
Like, can you build something big enough? And I don't think the problem is the fact that Solomon, David, Herod wanted to build a temple. I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is when we want to build things that say, look how good we are,
mm-hmm.
because God's behind us. Like,
sure.
Like, it's back to the Tower of Babel, where the people were building a name for themselves. In the next story, we have Abraham. He's still Abram at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when he comes face to face with God and gets told to go to a land that he builds something, but not for himself, he builds an altar for the Lord.
Yeah.
And so he's looking to memorialize God's name, where I gotta believe that Herod was looking to memorialize his own name when he
sure.
built the second temple.
As everything that Herod did.
Yes.
This is classic Herod.
Now, the people of Israel, over and over and over again, were just super passionate about God's house.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Daniel, you look at you know, just some of the other prophets, who goes to repair the wall, Nehemiah.
Yeah.
Like people, like they're passionate about the name of God, and I know that's true of Israel. Like there are people today that are still passionate about God's name, and so I think that is God honoring.
Sure. And God can totally, God was using those temples.
Yeah.
Like it was still, it's when those temples became, they missed the point completely. Then they get raised.
And if I want to apply this, if I want raised by Lord.
Raised.
And if I want to apply this to myself, like, I'm excited to see what God does in Missoula.
Sure.
And what God does through Mission Ridge Church
mm-hmm.
to benefit Missoula. The temptation can be to build my own name,
mm-hmm.
my own reputation, and for me to start patting myself on the back, and as far as my part goes and in this story.
Sure.
And 5 years, 10 years down the road, will I be more concerned about God's name or my name? That's something that I need to personally, as one of the leaders of this church,
mm-hmm.
Be protect against.
Yeah, that's the thing to be cognizant of here. I think that's a good lesson to take away from that. Tell me about Daniel 2. You wanted to talk about that one.
Daniel 2. So in Mark 11, 22, Jesus is responding to Peter. When Peter sees that the fig tree has been withered, and Jesus answers saying to them, have faith in God. Truly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, be taken up and cast into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes in what he says is going to happen, it will be granted to him.
Mm-hmm.
And as I read that over and over and over again, I'm going, why a mountain? Why
sure.
a mountain? Why a mountain? So I did a quick word search using handy dandy Bible Gateway, and I came to Daniel chapter 2.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, this is interesting. So let me read this to you. Daniel is talking to King Nebuchadnezzar. He's had a dream. He's looking to all his magicians to interpret the dream. No one could interpret the dream. Sounds a little bit like Pharaoh and Joseph.
Yep.
And Daniel says this, then there will be a fourth kingdom as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron crushes and shatters all things. So like iron that breaks in pieces, it will crush and break all these in pieces. In that you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, it will be a divided kingdom. It will have in it the toughness of iron, as much as you saw the iron mixed with common clay. As the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of pottery, so some of the kingdom will be strong and part of it will be brittle. Now, when we look back on Daniel talking about these four kingdoms, the fourth kingdom ends up being, drum roll please, Rome. And in that you saw iron mixed with common clay, they will combine with one another in the seed of man, but they will not adhere to one another, even as iron does not combine with pottery. So Rome looked to kind of integrate and with every nation that they overthrew. And they raised up leaders within those nations. And so it was part iron, it was part clay. Because if Rome comes into your country, if Rome came into our country today, would we want to be Roman or would we want to be American?
Exactly.
Yeah, we'd want to be American.
Yep.
Well, there's some that want to be Roman, but that's another story. In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed, and that kingdom will not be left for another people. It will crush and put an end to all these kingdoms, but it will itself endure forever. Inasmuch as you saw that a stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it crushed the iron, the bronze, the clay, and the silver, and the gold, all the kingdoms. Mm-hmm. The great God has made known to the king what will take place in the future, so the dream is true and its interpretation is trustworthy. And then it goes on to say that the kingdom, this stone that destroyed these kingdoms, will become a great mountain that the whole world will be able to see.
Mm.
Well, this next week, one of the stories that we'll get into, Jesus identifies himself as the stone which the
builders rejected.
That stone is the stone that destroys Rome.
Stone cut out of a mountain makes me think of, and we'll iron this out a bit further as we keep talking. I know what we wanted to get to was Herod. And we'll talk about Herod's palace, Herodium, and how he built a mountain. But because of that, that makes me think of, you know, the way the Gospels start in the time of Herod.
This is, and so Paul, our pastor, has been talking about how the kingdom that Jesus establishes will be the downfall of Rome.
Yeah, we've talked about that.
And has changed human history.
Yep.
And continues to be, you know, whenever there's something I think truly positive that's happened within throughout history, I think of the freedom of slaves and giving voice to women and equality issues and and all those things, I believe the church has always been at the forefront.
Yeah.
When the church has really been the church.
Sure.
Now.
Actually on mission.
Yeah. Now Rome.
Cluttering the Gentile court.
Yes. Rome wants to. Will always want to be back in the mix. And so the church changed Rome, but then Rome did its best in the following centuries to try to change the church.
Sure.
And there were some really ugly times for the church and how political the church became. And we see in
how they got off mission
in England and in Germany, in the Middle Ages,
sure,
the influence that the church had, on politics and the politics, the influence they had on the church, and it was a mess. But when the church is being the church, people experience grace, there becomes freedom.
It brings about shalom.
And so, kind of a cool connection between Daniel 2 and Mark chapter 11.
Well, the next thing, and I think the last thing that we wanted to talk about, though, and Josh, you already started leading into this perfectly, was Herod building a mountain.
Moving. He moved a mountain. He didn't like where it was at.
Yes. So, tell me about this.
You know,
because you've been there.
I have been there. The thing they say in realty and selling houses is location, location, location. And I have that memorized. I'm not a realtor, but
play one on TV.
Herod. Gosh, where did it start with Herod? Herod's house, his castle, Herodium, one of the few places, one of the things that we talk about as we kept going to these places where that Herod had built, Caesarea, Philippi, or Maritima, or I don't remember which is which. I always confuse them. Masada, near the Dead Sea, and finally...
He had a lot of houses.
Finally, Herodium. He had a lot of houses, but the one thing that most of his houses have in common is that we don't actually know if he ever went to them. But Herodium is one of them that we know that was where he spent a lot of his time, was at Herodium. And this particular palace is interesting because he built a palace and then moved a mountain on top of it, essentially. He said, I want this to be a mountain, and he moved a mountain to where his palace was.
So I'm gonna build my basement above ground.
Yep.
I'm gonna move the mountain.
Put the mountain in the house and shake it all up.
It just happens to have a higher elevation than the Temple Mount, and a higher elevation than Jerusalem itself.
Oh, just randomly.
Randomly, just and it is the highest chance. Peak within the Jordan wilderness.
Oh, he just, you know, decided he would move this here just randomly, didn't, you know.
Because that's Herod.
It's going to end up being higher than the temple in Jerusalem and everything around it.
He's on top of the world.
Just,
and if you were a Jew,
he is the top of the world.
If you were a Jew of that time,
whew,
and you wanted any mountain thrown into the sea,
that would be the one.
Herodium would be the mountain.
Baby.
Well, and because this is so tall and so grand, I would imagine where Jesus is talking with this withered fig tree, I would imagine he could probably point and make a little bit of a reference. He might be subtly tongue-in-cheek saying, with enough faith, that mountain right there, just, you know, glancing over his shoulder, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you can move a mountain into the sea, Peter. I think that probably could be what Jesus is doing here.
And his disciples would have gasped.
They probably would have caught that reference.
So good.
I don't know, we're making mountains out of molehills, but...
Yes.
Maybe not. So, and that's... Like, the power of that, like, the insight there, like, we've took, 20-some verses, not even that, 10, 15 verses out of Mark, and we've done an entire sermon, and now, roughly, you know, better part of an hour footnote that we're digging into this. Like,
I hope that anybody who is listening to us is getting the picture that there is depth and layers, like cake.
Yeah.
Not like onions. Oh. Nobody likes onions.
I learned.
Maybe like a parfait?
Like a parfait!
Everybody loves parfait.
Everybody loves parfaits.
I've been looking at these stories for 40 years.
Ancient of days.
Ancient of days. I've been looking at these stories for 40 years. And every time I open it up and I start asking questions,
sure.
And get past the lullaby effect, I'm like, why a mountain? Why did he walk in and look around? You know?
Fig tree. Why a fig tree?
Why is he cursing a fig tree? And we haven't looked at that. Like, there's, you know, he's cursing a fig tree that's in season or not in season. And
then the thing that the disciples, they look at it, and the thing that shocks them isn't that it's withering. They're shocked at how quickly it's dying.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Why is that there?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so much depth to this, and the interconnection of scripture from story to story, and the wink, wink, nod, nod. Are you hearing?
Are you getting this?
Do you have ears to hear? Do you want to be taught? Do you?
Yeah.
Do you want to grow? Do you want to move forward? or do you want to do your rote memorization? And because my name is on your dollar bill, you know, you think you're good.
Yeah.
Just, are you comfortable just drinking the milk, just shooting the peshat? Or are you are you gonna start taking some bites of chunks of meat and get into that darash?
Just dig in, just bite into that darash.
Take a big old bite of that darash.
I'm just gonna shoot the peshat. My goodness. That's
well, with that.
On that note. Well, no, the best way to wrestle with this stuff though is in community. So if you're not in a care group, get your butt into a care group.
Yeah.
You can come join me and Josh's care group. We have the most fun.
Oh yeah.
Second to us might be Rob's care group. They might have fun.
We have some fun. And I always enjoy coming off the stage and preaching, and someone goes, and did you hear about this theory? And I'm like, yeah, that's a good one too. Like dive into that deeper, you know, people wrestling. We don't have all the answers. We got some questions we're asking.
Oh, I might have all the answers. I might have them all. I might not, though.
Logan's been wrong before.
It's been known to happen occasion.
Happened on occasion.
Like, you know, reading my watch before service. Or whatever.
Time.
Really, I was just, you know, I was more right. Everyone else was wrong.
You were just early for next
anyway.
Week.
Time is relative.
Exactly. It was fine. I was just making sure that everybody was there on time.
Minute to Logan is like maybe a couple of minutes.
Of an age, something like that. Anyway,
yeah.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Footnotes, and we will see you next time.
Peace.
Adios.
You've been listening to Footnotes on the Mission Ridge podcast. For more information about Mission Ridge, please visit our website at missionridge.church. Thanks for tuning in. We hope the rest of your week is straight up hashtag blessed, and that you'll join us again next week for more Footnotes.
I think we have a visitor. Probably someone hit the doorbell.
I'll open the door. Gotcha. The door is locked. The way is shut.
And the dead controlling it? Is it?
And the dead controlling it. Something like that. Well, let's, I'll edit that a little bit out.